Well, good evening. This is Bill Blatchford, and I want to thank you for being on this webinar tonight. We have a large audience on the call tonight, and so I'm going to be going through some slides, going through some concepts with you, and due to the number of people on the call, you're all muted. You can type your questions in. You have a question box on your screen. You can type the questions in the question box or the chat box, and you can ask questions as we go along. Now, what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to have one of my team members read questions to me. I will answer as many as I can. Now, if you do not get your question answered tonight, don't panic. Just make sure that we know, put your name down. We already have your phone number, so put your name down with your question, and one of my team members will give you a call and either explain something in more detail that we covered tonight or answer your question or whatever it is. So don't despair if we don't pick your question. We will answer as many questions as we can. We have over 100 doctors signed up for this call tonight, and it will be difficult to get to all the questions. But I do appreciate you being on this call. Now, I do a series of these calls. We did one recently on overhead control. Some of you, I see some familiar names on the list. Some of you are on that call. I also recently did a call. I do a call about once every 6 weeks with one of our clients and explore what they did and how they benefited from the Blatchford Coaching Program. So these calls are done hopefully to give you some real valuable information that you can use in your practice, in your life. And, of course, secondly, we'd like you to take a look at our coaching program that we've been doing now for over 20 years, and we have a lot of successful doctors all over the country. As a matter of fact, recently I did a seminar for Bonnet Dental Laboratory on Friday, and it's our third year in a row there, and we had the room filled up, and so we had all of our clients in that upstate New York area come on the Saturday, and it was very interesting that with the doctors and their teams there, and we had a room full of people, they all had record years last year, and most of them were able to reduce the amount of time they worked and still had a record year. Now, we're hearing that from doctors all over the country, regardless of economic conditions where they are. They're having very good years. So it works. So we won't talk much about that tonight, but I want to talk about balance. Now, the first person that started talking about balance that I remember of in dentistry was L.D. Pankey, and he had his cross of life, work and play, love and worship. And, you know, this is really one of the things that I hear the most from doctors as I travel and as I listen to the doctors that are thinking about doing our program and when I'm speaking in larger meetings. This Friday, I'm speaking at the Oregon Dental Meeting, which is not a very large meeting. I'm speaking at the California Dental Meeting in Anaheim in just a few weeks. And then from there, I go to speak at the Alaska State Dental Meeting. But I'm at these meetings all the time. And one of the things that I find is that doctors are telling me that while they're making a good living, they find it that they're spending so much time doing it, or they feel like their practice consumes them. And life is what's left over. And this is what the doctors are telling me. And then when I talk to the doctor's spouse, I usually hear the real truth, and I find out that, well, in fact, the income is not as great as they would like, and the doctor is spending way more time than they would like to have them spend. Now, I don't know what motivated all of you to go into dentistry. I know what some of the things that motivated me to go into dentistry. And part of it was I enjoyed working with people. I enjoyed science. I wanted to help people. I wanted to work with my hands, and I considered medicine. And one of the reasons I chose not to go into medicine was the fact that they have no life. I had a job during the summers in college running a city swimming pool, and the city tennis courts were right next to the pool, and these were in days prior to the cell phones, and so one of our GPs in town, he was very well known, very popular, and he would try and come down and play tennis in the afternoons and in the evenings. And of course, when he was on call, which was 7 days a week, my job was to go over and get him off the tennis court because somebody had a broken leg, or somebody was having a baby, or somebody needed to be sutured up, and so I would go over and get him off the tennis court. and he'd go to his office or go to the hospital and take care of these people. And I thought to myself, you know, this is not what I want. And I knew a number of families of physicians, and they said they never see their father. In those days, there were very few women physicians. It was mainly men, but they never saw them. And yet I talked to some dentists, and they had a very nice lifestyle. And so I chose dentistry originally because it does have all of the things that I wanted, plus it had a lifestyle. Now, one of the things that we teach at Blatchford Solutions is that you design your life the way you want your life to be, and then you create a practice to support that life, not the other way around. And what I hear from so many doctors and doctors' spouses and families is that the practice is so consuming. And I think that it doesn't have to be that way, and that's what I'd like to explore on this call tonight. About a month ago, I did a call, and it's on our website. You can go to it. It's called Michael Fulbright, and it's an A-game call called A-game, which is after our book, Playing Your A-Game. I do one of these about every 6 weeks. And the last one I did was Michael Fulbright, who practiced down in Southern California in Redondo Beach. And when he came to us, and so you can go to that call and listen to his story, but he came to us, and he was working about 6 days a week, and he was doing okay. But we worked with him during the year, and he's now down to 3.5 days a week. And we increased the net income by $200,000 in that first year. Now, to me, that's working. And he said on that call that the increased income has been wonderful, but what's better is the amount of time that he has for his family. And that's very important to us. Now, one of the things, and you're hearing an F-16 take off there. I live fairly close to Portland Airport, so if that bothers you, that is the sound of freedom going over right there. So anyway, there we are. One of the things that I see in practices, and they always take off in pairs, so there goes another one to being a pilot. I love that sound. It may interrupt our call for a little bit, but that's the way it is. One of the things that I see in creating balance, first off, you decide how you want your life to be. In other words, how much time would you like to work? How much time would you like to spend in the office? How much time would you like to devote to continuing education? How much time would you like to devote to vacations and travel? How much time would you like to devote to perhaps community service or doing dentistry in a volunteer capacity, either at home or abroad? And you start to plan your life, you see, and figure out how you want it. Now, in this balance, there is all of these things play into it. I mean, it's just go back to L.D. Pankey. Work and play. Well, how much time do you want to practice? How much time do you want to play? Play is, I consider, strictly recreation. And then you have love, when that's your family side. You know, how much time for your family? How much time for worship or for your church or spiritual activities? So all of these things fit in. Now, I have had a chance over the last 25 years to work with somewhere around 2,500 dentists. And I have worked with dentists who are tremendously successful. And successful to me means that you are doing what you want to do. In other words, your life is fulfilled. You feel good about what you're doing. It's not how much money you're making. It's, do you feel fulfilled doing it? I mean, if you're making a certain amount of income, but you feel beat up and you don't have any time for yourself, well, that's really not successful. Or if you are making a lot of money and your family suffers because of it, that's not successful. So, or if you're doing really well in your practice, but you have no time for exercise or recreation, you see, that doesn't work. So we're talking about a balance of all systems here. Now, part of the reason that so many doctors don't have this balance in life is because they didn't plan it that way. I mean, that's why I chose dentistry in the first place, and fortunately I was able to meet a man early in my career named Charlie Stewart, who this time, when I started my practice, almost every dentist was working 5 days a week, and many were working 5 and 6 days a week. and working evenings wasn't uncommon, and he took me aside and kind of explained to me that, you know, a four-day work week, unless I was turning patients away, there was no reason to work anymore. And so I immediately started working a four-day work week right from the start. And during that period of time, I also took a month off in the summer. Now, my wife and I raised two daughters, and we always took a month off in the summer. And so we've always taken a lot of time off. So let's talk about some of the systems. One of the reasons that most dental practices aren't able to do it is because the doctor has something confused. You see, there are two concepts, two lives, two ways that we get paid, two economies, two paradigms, two ways to think about this. About 95% of the entire population of the world exists, works, and gets reimbursed in what is called the time and effort economy. Now, the time and effort economy, and you can all identify with this, is because these people get paid based on how much time they spend and how much effort they put out. In other words, so many people work by the hour. Now, here's something to think about. This is a little bit of a dichotomy in dentistry, in that if a team member gets paid by the hour, you see, what is their reward? Well, their reward is to work more hours, and that's how they get a raise. And so that's the person doing your scheduling is getting paid by the hour. You're going to work a lot of hours. So it's just something to think about. So time and effort, you get rewarded based on the time and effort that you spend. Now, as an entrepreneur, as a dentist, you get paid not on time and effort, but you get paid on results. And your results are based on how effective and how efficient you are at delivering the treatment that you deliver to your patients. So you get paid on results. You see, it doesn't matter how many days that you spend in the office or how long it takes to do that procedure. You get paid per procedure. And if you can become more efficient at that procedure, you actually have a higher income per hour than someone who takes longer to do it. Real simple. But this is a big deal because, you see, many of my clients are now working 3 days on patients. They work 3 days with patients. They have a half day of what we call buffer time, and then they have free time. Now, let's explore those three ways of using time for just a moment. If I am working, and I understand the results economy, and if I can produce all of the dentistry that I have to produce in 3 days, now 3 days of what we call focus time, and focus time is dentist hands in a patient's mouth. Dentist hands in a patient's mouth. Today I was doing, part of our program is I talk to all my clients on a monthly basis, one-on-one. And I was talking to one of my clients today who happened to be in that program we just did in New York. And he said, one of the comments I made that day was to time the amount of time, in other words, have your dental assistant time how much of the day do we have the dentist hands in a patient's mouth. Now, my definition of work, of course, is force times distance. In other words, something is moving. In a dental practice, that means the dentist hands in the patient's mouth, burr is turning, or at least the dentist is doing something in the patient's mouth. And we take the typical dental office, and what we find is that that's about 20% of the day. In other words, it's about 2 hours, 20-25% of the day, or about 2 hours, are we actually hands in the mouth, actually working. So if we can increase that by 50% and keep your hands actually in a patient's mouth 3 hours a day, you see, we can do in 50% more per day, which gives us we can work less days per week doing that and still get the same amount of work done. So understand the difference between time and effort and results. So here's what we look at. We break the time into three types of time usage. One, focus days. Now, for you folks, a focus day is a day that you're treating patients, and I including exams in that as well, but not treatment planning. Treatment planning would be a preparation day. But a focus day, you're actually treating patients. Now, we have clients that range in goals anywhere from $3,000 a day to $15,000 a day. Now, here's the question I always ask. If one person can produce $15,000 a day, why would somebody work 5 days a week doing $3,000 a day? It's the same amount of production. Now, understand, those people producing $15,000 a day have some exceptional skills, They've learned to be extremely efficient, and they've assembled a really efficient team. In other words, they've taken everything away from that dentist that does not require a dental license. And see, in those particular teams, nobody's coming to the doctor in the middle of the day, catching them in the hallway, and saying, "Hey, doc, you got a minute? I've got this problem I need solved." That's not going on. They're solving their own problems. They're keeping that doctor focused on doing dentistry. And typical practice that we work with is the 3 days of focus days. Then what we have is we have a half day a week of what we call buffer time or preparation time. Now, buffer time is when we solve those problems. Buffer time is when we have our team meetings. Buffer time is when you do your treatment planning. Buffer time is doing anything that's required to do in the office other than hands in the mouth. It would also include management time, looking at your numbers, doing the various things that you have to do as the owner of this business, but you don't mix it in and you don't try and do 5 minutes here or 10 minutes here in between patients. It's focused on buffer. It's focused on preparation. So focus time and buffer time. And now, if you followed this to this point, now you have 3 to 3.5 days a week of free time. Now, free time is a free day. It's a 24-hour period that is not interrupted with dentistry. You've already got all that stuff done. And so it's free time. Now, some of you say, "Well, I just don't have anything to do in my free time. I just love dentistry so much." Well, my suggestion there is get a life. I mean, get out and learn some hobbies. Now, learn something that you can do. It might be, if it's not recreation, maybe it's community service, whatever it is you want to do, but have a life outside of your practice. An observation that I can tell you that is universal. When I find doctors who have been practicing for 25, 30 years, those doctors that seem to have the most enjoyment of life are those that have something outside of dentistry that they're passionate about. You see, you need some things outside of dentistry that add meaning to your life. And I see doctors who don't have anything there, and I think, well, gosh, maybe they should hire me just to teach them some hobbies. I feel if you're not learning something new every year, you're kind of slipping behind. My current new endeavor outside of what I do for a career is I'm learning to kiteboard. Now, kiteboarding it's like learning to water ski behind a parachute, and the first thing you have to do is learn how to fly the parachute, learn how to fly the kite, and then you learn how to get on the board and do it in the water. And in the learning stages, you drink a lot of, in my case, I do it in the ocean, you're drinking a lot of salt water. But it's quite exhilarating when you get going on it, and I'm still a rank beginner, but it's something that challenges me, and it's something that will consume me for a while. And it's not just killing time, it's actually learning something new, different, and exciting. So understand the difference between time and effort and results. Now, I mentioned systems earlier, and I'm going to mention them again. One of the problems that we have a solution for is let's put systems in place in a dental office. What I find in most offices, we don't have systems. I'm talking about systems, for example, scheduling, systems for collection, systems for setting up rooms, systems for recall, systems for all of these things. And anything that's not documented is not a system. And one of the things that I see is that so many offices, we are basically winging it on a daily basis. And then that person that does that moves on for whatever reason, and we start over again. And now we go off in a different direction, and we do it the way that person did it in the previous office they worked in, or maybe they heard it was done that way, and we don't do it. So we set up systems for everything in the office. You see, McDonald's is a great example of this. And Ray Kroc decided that he could create these systems, that if everything was systematized and recorded and you are trained to prepare that food in a certain way, you can go to any McDonald's in the world and get the same quality of food. Now, I happen to love their Angus burger. Now, I allow myself one a week. I could balloon up if I had more than one a week, but one a week. But I know that anywhere I am in the country or even the world, I'm going to order that Angus burger, and it will be the same every place I go. Now, you see, in a dental office, if we systematize things, we can now operate this office with with a smaller number of people. And one of the things you will notice that most of our teams have a very small number of people because we've got a system that works, and now we don't have to hire so many helpers. See, your schedule, for example, is part of this. See, we set up a template called block booking, and this is real important. And many of our clients that have finished our year's coaching program say this is one of the greatest things that happens, and yet I think it's one of the simplest things. You know, last night, the men's college basketball final occurred. And one of the things that happened there, and I was not able to watch the entire game because I was busy doing something, but I understand that UConn came out and was just flat. I think they shot 23% in the first half. Now, you understand that both of those teams have practiced these plays, practiced these patterns. And yet when they came out to play, Butler kind of interfered with UConn's patterns. Well, they went back to the dressing room at the halftime, and the coaches got going, and they got those guys back on track, and they said, okay, Butler's interrupting these patterns, but we're going to stick with them. And they came back and they ran those, and they did very well in the second half, and they beat them. Well, when you design the perfect schedule for your day, it won't always turn out the same. But we still go back and we try and recreate that day. We recreate that perfect day, day after day after day. And it works. Now, part of that schedule is create that perfect day, but then let's create the perfect week, the perfect month, and the perfect year. So to me, we've got the perfect day. We're meeting our production schedules. We're providing quality care for our patients. It's fun and enjoyable. That means not stressful. All those things about it, and it's working. And then we figure out, okay, how many days a week do I want to do this? How many weeks do I want to take a vacation? And what I see is the most productive doctors are working no more than a four-day work week. Most of them are not working evenings or Saturdays. Many of our most productive doctors are now down to 3.5 days a week, including that half day of buffer time. And they're not going to the office on the other days. As a matter of fact, several of them schedule an appointment for themselves outside the office at noon on that fourth day to do something, either a trainer or a golf game, or schedule something that's important to them. And so they're out of there. And then what we're finding is that most successful doctors are taking a vacation. That is, taking an entire week off about every 6 week or so, which gives them about 8 weeks a year. So in other words, they actually work out that perfect schedule. Now, here's a question that I would ask. Would you rather have a practice doing $1 million at a 75% overhead, or a practice doing roughly $600 at 55, or even a $500,000 practice at 50% overhead? Well, those are choices that you get to make. You see, these are choices. And what I find is that top practice up there, the $1 million with the 75% overhead, is pretty typical. And yet, there's a doctor that's not taking home any more money than the one doing 600. In other words, you're doing an extra $400,000 in treatment, and I don't care how fast you are, it does take some time to do that last $400,000, and if your overhead is 75%, what have you accomplished? You know, these are interesting numbers to me because in 1985 was the first year that I produced $1 million, and I was by myself. Big team, but I was by myself as far as doctors go. I was in a small town, Corvallis, Oregon. We had 40,000 people in the town. 12,000 of those were university students. We had about 28,000 full-time residents. And we had 54 general dentists in that town. So it wasn't exactly out in the middle of this underserved desert in Oregon. It was, there were a lot of dentists. Now, those were my numbers. Now, at the end of the year, I sat down with a friend of mine who I had lunch with about once or twice a month, and he had done $600,000, but his overhead was 55%. He actually took home the same amount that I took home, but I had to do an extra $400,000 of dentistry to do that. And that's when I really started thinking about this balance. You know, at that time, my wife and I were running marathons for a hobby. Now, she would train. I did aerobic dentistry 4 days a week, and I'd show up on the day to run the marathon, and she generally beat me. I finally beat her once, and I retired from that sport after beating her once. But the point was, who's so smart here? I think it's much wiser to do the 600 at the 55, but wouldn't it be even wiser to do a million at 50 or 55%? And that's what we really work on. And I really work a lot on the overhead of these practices. Now, there's another one of these open mic calls on overhead, and you can go to that as recorded. It's on our website. So I'm not going to spend any time on that tonight. But you can get your overhead down to 50, 55%. There's something that occurs, though, that I do want you to think about, and that is a concept here called capacity versus demand. And I should have put demand there instead of results, but it's okay. Capacity versus the results that you're getting means that I have the capacity to produce this much dentistry, but my results don't show. My results are not showing up there. And the reason for that is that you have more capacity than you have demand for. Now, one of the things that I see in the overhead equation that many dentists have a high capacity, but they don't have the demand for it, and therefore the results aren't showing up. As a matter of fact, the results are lower than expected because their overhead is high because of the high capacity. So one of our concepts is to titrate the capacity down to what your actual demand is. Then we grow the practice. Now, I know that a lot of practice management consultants will have you have high capacity and then institute large marketing expenses trying to grow that demand. Now, that's a good concept, and we do that also. But I don't grow the demand until we have titrated the overhead and the capacity down to what we're actually doing now. Now, as we increase demand, that extra income goes in our bank account rather than just going to pay for overhead. So that's a concept that we teach. So we have some time for some questions here, and I see that we're getting a few questions coming in. I'm going to have one of our team members actually ask the questions. So why don't we take the first question?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is a question. I have read your blueprint book, A Common Thread is Apparent, Low Overhead and High Profitability. How do you motivate your Blatchford teams to pull it all together and make it happen? And I am currently doing $1.2 million, have 6.5 employees, and my overhead is at 82%. I have to say the stories seem too good to be true. Do you have doctors who have successfully implemented your program I can talk to?
Yes, yes, and yes. You've read the book. Now, what we did in that book is we portrayed 20-some offices that are doing really well, and they're diverse. They're very diverse. They're from all parts of the country. And there are large practices, there are small practices. But a common thread is that we have relatively small numbers of staff members. And the reason we can do it is we have very good systems in place. Then we hire very well-qualified people, and we train them. And we, at Blatchford Solutions, we help you train those doctors on these staff members on these systems, so you don't need to hire a helper for that person. And then what we do, in addition to that, well, this is a big question, then we put a bonus plan in place to give them some incentive to want to learn, and because they have a vested interest in the practice. And if you go back to either the Michael Fulbright call or go back to the call on overhead on the open mic, you will find the bonus plan is based on about 20%. Now, that varies based on the style of practice. The example we used is 20%. So in that situation, you see, the team owns 20% of the income. Now, they can choose to divide that income. And by the way, you are producing very well. I mean, this would be an easy practice to work with. At 82%, I mean, you're only taking home 18% of that. We rounded off at 20%. You're taking home $250,000, and according to all the politicians in our country, that makes you wealthy. However, I could easily find another $150,000 in there of net income for you in that practice without working any additional days. As a matter of fact, you can probably work less. You did not mention in your question, and the question was not typed in, about how much you're working. But 82% overhead is not an efficient practice. That's a low miles per gallon. That's not efficient. So you see, when the team gets down to, okay, we've got 20%. Now we can divide that by 6.5 in your case, or we can divide it by 3. What happens is they become a little more accountable to each other, and they start looking around and saying, so-and-so is not pulling their weight here, and so maybe we don't need to replace her when she moves on. So that's part of how we motivate. So the answer to your question would be a good bonus system. Get your overhead down. I mean, I would think that at $1.2 million and taking home $250,000, that is not, I mean, you're working hard enough, but you ought to be taking home $400,000 to $500,000 of that, of net income, without working any additional time. I hope that answers your question. Okay, and you have another question.
Yes. The economy has hit me hard. Over the past 2 years, my production has dropped by $200,000. And I find it difficult to fill my 6 days of hygiene. Some days I have 2 to 3 hygiene opening per day. What should I do?
Well, you have several choices. I don't know where you live in the country, so it's hard to say. But here's something that's interesting. In the last 2 years, dentistry as a whole, this is my unofficial poll. This is following dental supply talking to dental supply companies, looking at their annual stock reports, and talking to laboratory owners. I would say that dentistry is down about 20%. Now, having said that, I will say this, that we have clients in all parts of the country. Some of the hardest hit parts of the country, for example, I have a client in Detroit who had a record year in 2010, and he had a big practice to start with. He had a record year in 2010. But here's the problem, I believe. The public has changed. Now, speaking to the Portland or the Oregon Dental Society on Friday, I'm speaking on flourishing in this new economy. The economy has changed all over the country, and we all recognize this. People are more resistant to sales. People are hanging on to their money. You ought to remember, this is not all you're doing, doctor. The American public has increased our personal savings rate by 50% in the last 2 years. Now, we've gone from 2% to a whopping 3%. Now, while that is good for individuals, it is terrible for our economy. It is terrible for our economy because people aren't spending the money. So what we have to, the question I would ask you if you were live on the call, I would ask you, what have you and your team done to improve your sales skills in the last 2 years? See, that's the question. And the answer is, in most cases, we've done nothing. We are doing dentistry the same way, or we are doing sales skills. We're doing dentistry the same way we've always done it. And so, expect a decrease in results. So in that case, what you have to do is work on your sales skills. It's a large part of our program. Next question.
Okay, I'm going back to the first question. Do you have doctors who have successfully implemented your program I can talk to?
Sure, we can do that. And I'll tell you what, I can't give you all those names tonight, but you will be contacted by someone after the call, and we will certainly give you references. And what I would ask you to do in asking for a reference is give the representative some information about your practice, and we can match you up with somebody in a similar situation. We have lots of references.
Okay, another question is, I know I need help, but I can't afford your program. Do you have financing available? $47,500 is a lot of money, and my wife thinks I'm crazy to spend money we do not have.
Well, I understand. I mean, that's always the issue. And, you know, where do you invest money? Our typical client last year raised their income by about $100,000 to $150,000, and that was with paying the $47,000 to us. Now, we do have 3 levels of coaching, and so depending on where your level of practice is, our lowest level is our silver level for new doctors, and it's $25,000, so I don't know which one you qualify for. And then we have a mid-range program for about $35,000, and then our top program, and you must have already checked this out, is $47,500. We do have financing available to it for it. The payments are about the same as hiring a $17 an hour dental assistant. Now, I don't know. Would you be checking with your spouse if you should hire a second dental assistant? I mean, I find that it's interesting that, and of course, we've been here on this question before a lot of times. Doctors will buy a new piece of equipment, they'll hire an extra staff member, and they don't consult with a spouse or accountants. Now, I think consulting your spouse is probably a good idea, but point is, how long has your spouse known you didn't have the balance in your practice or your life? How long has your spouse known that you weren't making as much money as you wanted? And the same thing with accountants. You know, how long has your accountant known you wanted to make more money? And if they could have solved this, why didn't they? So, long answer to your question. But yes, we do have financing available. Next question.
I am a Panky and I am a Panky and LVI guy, and I have all the skills to deliver the comprehensive cases. The problem is we can't get the patients to accept. At my current daily production, I can't imagine taking more time off. I will go under.
All right, so let's talk about this. First off, you're well-trained. Combination, and I applaud you for doing both of those programs because they have somewhat, you know, 90% of what they teach is the same. There's somewhat difference between some of their techniques, but I applaud you for doing that. You're well-trained. Now, let's learn how. Let's spend some time with your team on presenting these cases. I mean, that is one of the keys, is doing larger cases. And I happen to know the philosophy of the Panky Institute for case presentation, and it's based on the philosophy, if we educate them, if we simply teach them enough, that they will do it. Well, that doesn't work. I mean, it's that absolutely does not work. I mean, these people make their decision based on emotions, and one of the things that we do is train the team how to get the patient emotionally involved as opposed to trying to educate them to death. In my seminars, I call that educating them into submission. And so you have to spend the time and learn how to sell the treatment. And that, to me, is a major portion of the success of any business. Now, let's take the second part of your question. The second part of your question is, I can't imagine taking days off. Doctor, you have a problem. You have to learn to imagine taking days off, and that's probably going to take some work. You know, there's something called deserve level, and we all have a comfort zone we work in, and that deserve level has a floor, and it affects everything we do in our life, whether it's how much fuel in our fuel tank, money in our bank account, the clothes we wear, the house we live in, the vacations we go on, etc. And there's a floor. We will not go below that level. I will not go below a certain standard. But we also have a ceiling that we will not exceed. Now, one of the things that we do in our programs, have you take a look at that deserve level. But working more days, if you're not getting cases accepted, tell me. And of course, you can't tonight unless you chat the answer in. But tell me how working more days is going to get more cases accepted. You see, this is the time and effort versus results fallacy that so many of us deal with. If I just work more days, I'll get more done. Well, not necessarily. The answer is learning to sell the bigger case. And a bigger case might be two units at a time. You know, 95% of all Crown and Bridge, and this is a statistic we keep for all of our clients, 95% of all Crown and Bridge is done one tooth at a time. Well, you just start presenting treatment and presenting larger cases after you find out what the patient wants, and you'll be absolutely amazed. Today, I was talking with one of my clients, and it's actually a father-son combination, and they came to me because the son had recently joined the practice, and this practice was doing about $1 million, and they brought the son in, and all of a sudden they realized, whoa, we've got two dentists to feed here. We have to increase the income. So they were doing about $80,000 a month, roughly, 80, 85, and have been for a number of years. And this last month, and I just got this number from them today, they did $165,000 last month. Well, they've had 4 months in a row of their biggest months ever. This is a practice in southern Wisconsin. So, I mean, it's certainly in an area affected by the Rust Belt. And so they've had their four biggest months in their history, just the last 4 months, December through March. March was their biggest month at 165. And they have just started implementing some sales skills. So it's sales skills is the answer. Any other questions?
How do you work with an office that doesn't have high overhead? My overhead is currently around 45%.
Congratulations. Congratulations for keeping your overhead down. Now, what I don't know is what your income is, and secondly, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. So I don't know how to answer the question. If you're at 45% overhead and you want a higher income, well, we're going to have to increase your production. I mean, that's simple accounting. If you want more time off, we're going to work on your schedules. We're going to work on your efficiency. And again, seeking that balance that we're talking about tonight, you certainly have the overhead part down. And for all of you doctors listening that have higher overheads, here's a doctor on the call tonight with 45% overhead, so it must be possible. And we do have many clients that come in right between that 45-55% range, and that's really our goal. And so the answer to your question, how do I work with you? depends what you want. So what we do is we sit down with you. First off, you fill out about 10 pages of information for us. And then we sit down with you face to face and we spend the best part of a day and we determine where we're going. In other words, what is it you want? And then we go from there. So I don't know how to answer your question. Unless if you want higher income, we're going to raise your gross. If you want more time off, we're going to work on your efficiency. But congratulations on your overhead.
Another question?
Yes.
I would love to have 6 to 8 weeks of vacation with my family, but I'm concerned if I cut my days, my patients will go somewhere else. I can't afford to lose patients.
Well, very good.
There are lots of offices offering evenings and weekends.
So that's a paradigm that we have to explore, and we have to look at this one. And one of the things, first off, I took a month off every summer at a time. Now, I want you to think about this just a little bit. So you're one of the patients in the practice, and I had 2 days a week, two hygienists per day, 4 days a week. That's about 1,600 active patients in the recall program, plus we had patients that came in to see us occasionally. Now, let's think about this. How many times does one of those 2,000 patients have contact with my office? How many times a year? And it's generally done by appointment, isn't it? So what do? Well, the first thing we do if we're going to take a week off is we don't make any appointments in hygiene the week that we're going to be gone, or in my case, the month that we're going to be gone. We simply don't make any appointments. Now, if you don't have a dental appointment this week, do you know if your doctor is there or not? For example, let's say that all of you are dentists, and so you all have a physician, and if you did not have an appointment with your physician this week, do you know that your physician is on vacation this week or not? And the answer is, of course not. How would you know? Unless you happen to have a emergency or something. Now, here's one of the things that we do. First off, when I took the month off, what I did is I went to one doctor and take him out to lunch, and I would say, I'm going to be gone the first week of August. Could you handle my emergencies? Well, sure. And we have an agreement how we want those emergencies handled, palliative treatment only. And then I go to the second doctor and I say the same thing. I'm going to be gone the second week of August. Could you handle my emergencies? Certainly. Go to another doctor and say, I'll be gone the third week. Could you handle my emergencies? And the fourth week, et cetera. Now, I laugh about the fact we never let those four doctors get together for lunch because they don't need to know. And they eventually did know that I was gone for the whole month, but it doesn't make any difference. So if you're a patient that calls with an emergency during that period of time, what you get is you get a doctor that sees you, takes care of the emergency situation, and one of my team members will schedule you for an appointment when I return. Now, we don't say that I'm out of the office for a month. We just say we have an appointment. I understand you're out of discomfort. Then we can get you in and you give them a date. Now, the only patients, doctor, that you will miss are the new patients that come to you for the first time with a toothache. Now, I'm going to suggest something to you. And I've already done this, but you can go ahead and do it. You go back in your patient records, and you study the people that come to your office the first time with a toothache. In other words, their first exposure to you is a toothache or a broken tooth or something like that. In other words, it's an emergency patient that you're afraid you're going to miss. And let's say it's a abscess tooth, and let's say it's a root canal and a buildup and a crown. So we think that we've made some money on that. But one of the things that my doctors know is they know their overhead per hour. And then we try to schedule that patient for a complete exam. Now, remember, the overhead for the complete exam per hour is the same as it is for everything else, whether it be the root canal or the crown, because when we do the overhead per hour, we exclude the lab bill. Now, let's just say that your overhead per hour is roughly $200, which is not unusual for the doctor, and then that much more for the hygienist. So we schedule that patient for an exam, and we set up an hour for it, and now we have to subtract $200. When that patient doesn't show, we have to subtract $200 in profit we made on the root canal and the crown. Well, they finally come in, and we reappoint them, and we finally get them set up, and they schedule a time with a hygienist, and, of course, they cancel that appointment, and we subtract another $200. And anyway, the results of that survey, the results of that study, and I've done this in many practices, we find that about 90% of the patients that show up that we took into the practice with a toothache, with a dental emergency, that was their first exposure to us, we find that by the end of 24 months, about 90% of the time, we're lucky to break even on that particular patient. So that goes back to a leadership question that we start out with is, who are we, what do we do, and for whom do we do it? Now, I don't want to turn anybody away in pain. And if you're practicing and you're the only dentist in town, then you truly have a problem. But you said there are other doctors available that can take care of these patients. So I would develop a marketing program to attract patients by some other unique proposition other than the fact that you're open 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. I mean, you can develop a practice around that sales proposition, but if you develop something in addition to that, another reason people would be compelled to come see you, that's what I would work on. So, yeah, you cannot see every patient in town. Now, will your patients miss you? I hate to tell you this, but probably not. And if you start doing more comprehensive diagnosis on your patients, you won't have as many patients calling with emergencies. Now, the sad part of it is that most of your patients won't even miss you. Now, that's also the good news, because you can take a week off. You can take 2 weeks off, and they won't even know it. Now, a big mistake that a lot of offices make is they're getting ready to take a week off, and they start telling all their patients about it. And then, of course, everybody that thinks they might have a problem shows up on the last day you're there, and you're working until late at night trying to take care of all those problems. We never talk about the vacations in the office. We don't talk about the vacations before we go, and we don't talk about the vacations after we get back. They generally don't care. We ask them about their vacations, but we don't talk about ours. Go ahead, go back to time and effort versus results. Another question. Well, we've got lots of questions here tonight. This is wonderful.
Okay. I have also read blueprints, and it seems to me that these highlighted practices offer a wide range of treatments. Is one able to do what you propose doing, restorative care, prosthetics, and limited endo oral surgery? I'm not exactly sure what he's asking. Is one able to do what you propose doing, restorative care, prosthetics, and limited endo oral surgery?
Well, that's a good question. The answer is yes. People are able to do those things. So here's one of the things that I do. You know, I have clients that are very specialized. I mean, I have one client that does nothing but implants and implant surgery and implant restorative. That's all he does. I have other clients that are total broad spectrum of services. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we recommend most of the time is learning some new skills. We call them purple cows. What's the purple cow in your practice? And that's after Seth Godin's book, The Purple Cow. What makes your practice special? For example, we have doctors that add sleep apnea to their practice, or we have doctors who add implant surgery skill to their practice. We have several doctors in the last several years I've been recommending learning to do IV sedation, because there's a huge population of baby boomers out there that are dental phobics. They're now edentulous or partly edentulous, and they would like to have implants, but they're still phobics. And if you can offer that combination of IV sedation and implant surgery, it is a dynamite combination. We have several doctors that have exceeded $2 million in production per year offering those two additional services. So, yes, you become somewhat of a super dentist in some cases. Other people specialize in certain things. It's up to you. Again, you do those treatments that you can do as well as anyone in your town. I don't want you doing a service or a treatment that someone can do better than you can. You should be sending that to the specialist or someone else. But, yeah, you can do it with a broad range, or you can do it with a narrow focus. Your choice.
Can you discuss what core team you would recommend for a startup with 5 chairs, and how many of those chairs would you recommend having to start with if you want to follow the capacity to demand principle?
Well, my first question is, do you have 5 treatment rooms, and you don't know this because you're reading this from a chat, do you have 5 rooms fully equipped? I would probably not start with 5 rooms fully equipped if I was borrowing the money to set up. I assume you mean a startup practice means no patients. I would probably start with 1 chair equipped until I at least had 1 patient. And I probably wouldn't put in, even equip the 2nd chair until I had a few patients starting to show up. Now, what I don't know is, where are you starting this practice? What is the demand in that area? And what is the projected new patient flow? And of course, nobody knows. But there are very few areas in the United States, there are a few, that you're going to have immediate demand, but I would equip those rooms as you need them. People equipping your office are probably going to try and encourage you to get them all at once, but I assure you they're still manufacturing this equipment. And if you buy one at a time, what works well, and we've helped some startup practices actually borrow the money, keep the loan real small, equip one room, and pay cash for rooms two and three. And I'll tell you, those doctors get out of debt a lot sooner and get rid of that overhead monkey sitting on their shoulder. Now, you ask about staffing. I would probably start, and again, it depends on the patient flow, but the first person I would hire would be what I call a resistant. A resistant's a combination receptionist and assistant, because remember, I don't have any patients yet, so I'm not going to hire three people to sit there and read the newspaper with me. I'd probably hire one person, and then as my patient flow build up, I would hire the next person, etc., and I would probably do my own hygiene for a period of time until I got enough hygiene going that it was taking more of my schedule, and I could fill my schedule as a doctor with more productive things. But I would go conservative on staff. I would go conservative on expenses for equipment. Now, the reason I say that is I've watched these practices for the last 25 years. I've been doing this, but I practiced dentistry for 20 years in addition to that. And literally, there was a time when it was almost impossible to fail in dentistry. But in the last few years, we've had a lot. We have over 200 dentists in the Las Vegas area who closed their doors. That is, walked away from their loan and filed bankruptcy. We had a similar number in the Scottsdale area. We've had a similar number in the southern Florida. And we've had people all over the country in the last few years. And a lot of those have gotten in over their head in debt. And that's one of the things that I see. And that's what we do in our silver program, is we help doctors in that setup phase, either a setup phase or purchasing a practice, to evaluate what's a good thing to do, what's not a good thing to do. But one of my whole purposes of that program, and we my wife and I have a daughter who started a dental practice. She actually bought a dental practice almost two years ago, in August. And that's where we really started watching what her classmates were doing. We developed the silver program. But I'd be very careful where I would set up to start from scratch. I would want to make sure that there was really a demand in that area, because one thing that I'll tell you about bankers, they'll be anxious to loan you the money, but they're also anxious to get repaid. And I would want to make sure there's a demand in that area. I'm speaking to the doctor who asked that question, I would be happy to spend some time with you on the phone at no charge, no obligation, and just ask some questions and talk about the area that you're setting up in, and then I could probably help you specifically with that question. But I'd start conservative. One of the things that I would say is that some of the questions is how can you really do it and have the balance? And I say, number one is design your life first, plan the vacations, and then set up a practice model to support that. And I suggest you take a look at long-term goals as well. You know, where do you want to be 20, 30 years from now? And that's one of the opportunities that I have in what I do, is I get to work with doctors at all levels and all stages of practices. And so I get to see what has been successful. And when I be successful again, it's being fulfilled, doing what you want to do your whole life, and feeling good about it. You know, in other words, would you recommend dentistry to your children? Recommend dentistry to your children, your friends' children. And I feel very good about that, given the fact that one of my daughters chose dentistry, and one of the things when I asked her, and she chose dentistry after she had two bachelor's degrees in very diverse things, and she had no science background, and decided to want to go to dental school. I remember asking her why she wanted to do that, because I was concerned if she was doing that to please me, it's way too much work for that. And she said lifestyle. That she remembered in the summers when we would either be, my wife and daughters would be in the parking lot of the dental office at 3:30 in the afternoon, either with a water ski boat heading for the river or with a horse trailer heading for the woods. And that, she remembered that. She remembered the month that we took off in the summer up on the boat. She remembered the trips that we were able to take and the fact that I came home happy from what I was doing. And that made me feel really good. So it's that lifestyle over a long period of time. And that's really an emphasis of our coaching program. So that's something for you all to think about. The benefits that I see in our coaching program is that why reinvent the wheel? I mean, the wheel has been invented. My father told my brothers and I a long time ago, if you want to be successful in something, find someone successful and copy what they do. I mean, don't go out there and try and reinvent it. I have no qualms at all about copying successful people. And as a matter of fact, that's where I get most of my information is find someone who's successful and study what they do and then do exactly what they do. A pitfall that many people fall into is they look at somebody that is more successful than they are. Now, I'm going to caution all of you. We measure success based on what you want to do. Don't measure your success based on somebody else's goals. That's a very quick way to insanity. But if you see someone that's getting the kind of results that you want to get, the tendency is to say, yeah, but they have a special circumstance. Yeah, but they were whatever. And it's real easy to say, or if you see somebody in dentistry, I hear this quite often. They're producing more dentistry than you are in a given amount of time or even less time. And it's real easy to say that, well, they're not providing the quality. Now, early in this call, you listened to four F-16s take off. Now, I've been a pilot for about 40 years, and when I started flying, I was flying a Cessna 150, which approaches an airport at about 60 miles an hour. Now, when I first started to fly, it seemed to me like that airplane, when I'd put it in, get set up for a landing, that ground was just rushing up at me. And as I progressed in through airplanes, and the fastest planes I flew were turbocharged twins that were coming in at about 160 miles an hour. And boy, the ground really was rushing up at me at that point. And after a little while, it got to where you're just kind of floating down. And then I watched those F-16 pilots come in, and they're coming in at a couple hundred miles an hour. And then you watch those guys, the F-18s, land on an aircraft carrier, and they're coming in a couple hundred miles an hour and slamming that thing on a carrier. Now, here's my question. If we use the dental analogy that you cannot provide quality and do it faster, you'd have to say that F-16 or the F-18 pilot is not as good as a pilot as the guy flying the 152. Can't possibly do a good landing at that speed. Well, in fact, they can. In fact, they're very good pilots. They're way better than I am. And part of the reason they're better is they do it faster. And that's the same thing with dentistry. So be careful with that paradigm that you have. So the thing is you can learn to do this in less time. So here's my question. Will 2011 be a banner year for you? In other words, what are you going to do? Yes, I recognize that the economy has changed. I've been lecturing on that for the last couple of years. The economy has changed, but what are you changing in your office to match that? In other words, the public has become a little more reticent to spend money. What have you done? What have your team members done to improve their sales skills? What have you done and your team have done to improve your efficiency? You see, these are the things that I look at. And so we get caught in this current that we're swimming against and just being swept downstream. And all of a sudden we feel this pressure. And now I feel I have to work more to make ends meet. And this whole thing about balance goes out the window. I mean, I was recently at a dental meeting talking to a dentist who told me that he used to work out on a regular basis, and now he's not because he doesn't have time. And I said, so what's going on in your life? Why don't you have time? I mean, this is his health we're dealing with. This is not something that we take lightly. This is your health, and he doesn't have time to work out because his income has dropped, and so he has to work more, and he can't take the time off. And I talked to doctors that they don't have time to see their children. They don't have time to take vacations anymore. And part of the reason is because their income has dropped, and yet their solution to it is work more. And that is a very common thing that we see with this work ethic that we have. And that's that work ethic that got you into dental school. That work ethic got you through dental school. is that I'll just work a little bit harder. But in business, it doesn't always help. So those are some things that we work on in our coaching program. I hope this is helpful to you in creating balance. The thing is either to set up, design your life first and be proactive about that, procrastinate, and keep on doing what you're doing. If you keep on doing what you're doing, you'll probably keep on getting the same results, and you'll be continuing to swept down that current out of balance. So how do you get back in balance? Design what balance looks like to you. I covered that one. So my question is to all of you on this call, if you're interested in starting your Blatchford journey, you'll be contacted by one of our representatives for being on this call. The call was recorded. You can go back and you can download it, listen to it again. And I ask that you at least come to the phone, talk to our representative if you're interested in creating balance and starting your Blatchford journey, or at least respond by email to us and say, hey, I'm not interested at all. That's okay, too. I understand. But at least take a phone call. Tell your receptionist that you're expecting a call. I don't want to interrupt what you're doing in the office, but if we happen to catch you at a time when you're available, let your receptionist know that you're available. Maybe you can set up a time to talk to us. So thank you very much. Thank you for those of you that wrote in questions. We appreciate that. If a question comes up that any of you would like to ask, just go ahead and email it to us at blatchford.com, and one of us will be happy to answer your questions. So thank you very much, and good night, everybody.